I'd like to start a statistics class with a basic discussion of probability, because probability theory is what underlies statistical reasoning. Two particularly important concepts, neither of which I'll quite get to today, are conditional probability and random variables. Today I just want to get through some basics. First basic definition is of a random process. You may have heard that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. Well, that's actually pretty close to the definition of a random process. It's a process that you can repeat many times and get different outcomes. For example, if you flip a coin, sometimes you'll get heads, sometimes you'll get tails. If you roll a die, sometimes you get a 1, sometimes you get a 2, sometimes you get a 3, 4, 5, 6. So a random process can be repeated many times with different outcomes. Having elections are random processes. Sometimes one party wins, sometimes the other party wins. Sports contests are random processes. Sometimes one team wins, sometimes another team wins, so on. The set of all possible outcomes of a random process is known as the sample space. In the case of flipping a coin, there are only two possibilities, heads or tails. In other situations, there may be many possibilities. You can imagine spinning a spinner that could land on three numbers, 0, 1, or 2, or it could land on three colors, red, green, or blue, and those could be the outcomes of that process. You can have discrete or continuous sample spaces. For example, suppose your random process is you take the temperature, the high temperature every day. So that what you have to do, since that temperature could be 27.3456 degrees, and you wouldn't want to necessarily count that as a separate from being 27.3457 degrees, what you do is you divide the sample space into intervals. So you have a discrete set of possible intervals. For example, you could have the temperature of under 0, temperature between 0 and 20. I'm using the less than or equal to sign by writing less than and then an equal sign. So that means that 0 is less than or equal to T is less than 20, so temperature between 0 and 20. Then between 20 and 50, between 50 and 100, or over 100. So the rules of creating a sample space are that there have to be no overlaps and no omissions. That way we can make sure that the probabilities sum to 1. Some event will happen, no event gets counted twice. That's kind of the rule. So what's wrong with this sample space? T less than 0, 0 is less than or equal to T is less than or equal to 50, 20 less than or equal to T less than or equal to 80. Well, right away we see a problem with the less than 50 and 20 to 80. Suppose that T was 25. Well, it's between 20 and 80. It's also between 0 and 50, and so the same event would get counted twice. So that would be wrong. Then we see with T less than or equal to 80 and 100 less than or equal to T that there's a gap between 80 and 100. Suppose that the high temperature of the day were 85. It wouldn't show up in the sample space. So this could not be a correct sample space. Another definition now is independent events. So this is, we're talking about two events. And later in this course, we'll talk about something called statistical independence. In fact, pretty soon we'll talk about that. But right now I want to talk about logical independence. Logical independence is when we have no reason to believe that two events affect one another. For example, if you flip three coins, there's no reason to believe that what happens on the first flip affects subsequent flips. On the other hand, if you're talking about, let's say, a series of elections, you might think that what happens in one election might affect the next election. So those probably would not be independent events. But something like flipping three coins would be independent events. For certain mechanical processes like coin flipping or rolling a dice, you can assume independence. Often, the way the problem will be stated will be, say, you can assume independence. For example, if you have two engines on a boat that might fail, somebody would have to state for you that the probabilities of those engines failing are independent, because if they're not independent, then then you can't use some of the rules that we'll talk about. Okay, so if you flip three coins and they're independent, then each one of these things in the sample space ought to be equally likely. That is, you could get three heads in a row, you could get three tails in a row, you could get two heads and a tail, head, tail, head, and so on. Each with equal probability if they're independent. Another definition we have to deal with is sampling with and without replacement. Classic example is a deck of cards. So you have a deck of cards sitting in front of you. You turn over the first card. What's the probability that that will be an ace? Well, it should be 1 out of 13, because 1 out of every 13 cards is an ace. But suppose the first card is an ace. Now what's the probability of getting an ace on the second card? Is it still 1 out of 13? Well, no, because you've already turned over one ace, and so the next card, there are now 51 cards left, but only three aces left. And so there's not a very high probability of getting an ace on the second card. The events are not independent. Now, we could make the events independent. How could we do that? Well, we could take our first card that we turned over, stick it back in the deck, shuffle very carefully and thoroughly, and then start over, and then pick a card. And at that point, obviously, the probability of getting an ace is once again 1 out of 13. So this, generally speaking, when you have a small fixed number of possibilities to choose from, let's say, there were eight ping pong balls in an urn, some of them, let's say, three of them green, three of them blue, two of them red. If you pick one of those balls out and look at the color, your effect, the remaining seven, you'll have a different probability. So when you have a small fixed number of probabilities to choose from, then, and you're choosing more than one, the results of those choices will not be independent. Only if you put the first choice back in and reshuffle will you have independence. So if you had those eight ping pong balls and you pulled one out and checked the color, and then you put the ball back in and shook the urn up again, then you would restore independence. So when you put something back and reshuffle, that's called sampling with replacement, and that creates independence between the multiple events. But not putting back and reshuffling is called sampling without replacement, and that tends to ruin independence in your choices. Next topic I want to discuss is called, I call failure models. And I want to distinguish a component failure versus a system failure. For example, suppose you're out in a boat in the middle of a lake and you have two engines. And it turns out that if both engines fail, you'll be stuck out in the middle of the lake. I call that a compound failure model because both components have to fail for the system to fail. So if only one component fails, you're fine. Another example is when one failure ruins the entire system. A classic example is old-fashioned Christmas lights, which were put on a serial circuit, meaning that if one light failed, all 20 of them would go out if there were 20 Christmas lights. A more modern example of a one failure model is a single elimination tournament like the NCAAs in basketball, where as soon as you lose one game, you're out of the whole tournament. So one failure means that the whole system fails. Here's another illustration of the component failure and the system failure. Suppose that we're in a seven-game playoff, like a basketball playoff or like the World Series, and one team is ahead 3-0. So what has to happen for that team to lose the playoff? It has to lose all four of the next games. On the other hand, to win the playoff, it only has to win one of the next four. So if you're behind 3-0 in a best-of-seven playoff, that means you've got to get four wins in a row. And suppose that each game is independent and your probability of winning a game is 0.5. Then we multiply out that probability four times to get your probability of winning. So we multiply 0.5 times 0.5 times 0.5 times 0.5, and you get 0.0625 is your chance of winning four games in a row after you're down 3-0. Conversely, the team for the team that's ahead 3-0, they will win as long as they don't lose. So their probability of winning is 1 minus that 0.0625 or 0.9375. Another example, suppose that a batter has a 0.3 chance of getting a hit. What is the probability of getting a hit twice in a row? Well, it's 0.3 times 0.3. Three times in a row, 0.3 times 0.3 times 0.3. Or n times in a row, it would be 0.3 to the n. Finally, another example with independence. Suppose that a lawyer has a probability of 0.6 of winning one case and a probability of 0.7 of winning a second case, and suppose that the two cases are independent. What is the probability of winning both cases? Well, for winning both cases, again, we use the multiplication rule. We multiply 0.6 times 0.7 and get 0.42 as the probability of winning both cases. To lose both cases, you can multiply the probability of losing each case. The probability of losing the first case must be 0.4. Probability of losing the second case must be 0.3. Multiply those together, it's 0.12. So we win both cases 42% of the time and lose both cases 12% of the time. So that means we must win exactly one case 46% of the time, because that is the number you need to add up to 100. Okay, and as a topic that helps illustrate the multiplication rule and probability, let's think of rolling two dice and then adding the numbers together. Now, if you roll two dice, there are a total of 36 possibilities. There's six possibilities with one die, six possibilities with the other, so a total of 36. And you could actually count the number of those, and they're equal probabilities, and you could actually count the number in which you could get a three. It turns out that there are two of them, and so you would say that there's a 2 out of 36 probability of producing a three. And if you counted them out, you would find that there are six that produce a seven, and so that there's a higher probability of rolling a seven because there are 6 out of 36 chances of getting a seven. Another way to see this is to think in terms of rolling the dice one at a time. So first you roll one die, and then you roll the second die. Now, if the first die produces a three, four, five, or six, then there's really nothing you can do that will with the second die that will give you a three. On the other hand, if the first die produces, let's say, a one, now you have a 1 out of 6 chance of getting a two on the second die, and then 1 plus 2 makes three. So I summarize that in the table. In the table, let's look at what happens when you roll the first die. If you roll a one, which has a 1 out of 6 chance, then you need a 2 on the second die, which is another 1 out of 6 chance. We multiply those two together, independent events, we multiply the probabilities, and we get 1/36 over in the upper right. Another possibility, going back to the first die, is you could get a 2 on it. In that case, you would need a 1 on the second die. Again, we multiply 1/6 times 1/6, and we get 1/36. Now, if you get a 3, 4, 5, or 6 on the first die, then there's nothing you can do on the second die that will give you a total of 3. So our overall probability of getting a 3 is 0 for that row. We add the three rows together, and we get a 2 out of 36 chance of rolling a 3. Now, you could try to set up your own table and see what the probability is of rolling a sum of 5 or a sum of 4, and you can check that out for yourself. So to review what we've learned today, several pieces of terminology. A random process, a process that can be repeated many times but with different outcomes. Again, use examples like flipping coins, rolling dice, going to bat and getting a hit or not, winning a playoff game or losing a playoff game, all sorts of random processes. The sample space is a set of all possible outcomes. The sample space must include every outcome and must not double count any outcomes. Independent events are events where the probability of something occurring does not is independent of another. That means the two events do not affect each other. So you assume that when you flip one coin, it doesn't affect how the other coin gets flipped. We can assume, it may not be true, but we might assume that whether one engine succeeds or fails is independent of whether another engine succeeds or fails. Next, we talked about sampling with replacement versus without replacement. With replacement means if you draw the card, you then, before you draw the next card, you put your first card back in and shuffle so that you don't change the probabilities. And so sampling with replacement is independent, creates independent events. Sampling without replacement tends to ruin independence. Next, we had the multiplication rule. When you have two independent events, and you know the probability of each event, and now you want to find the probability of both events occurring, you can multiply the probability of each event, again, as long as you're assuming independence. Once you get rid of independence, you can't use that multiplication rule. And finally, we had the failure models, where if every component in the system has to fail, then you can take the probability of failure to the nth, where n is the number of components in the system, to calculate the probability of the system failing. Or if you have the opposite case, where you only have to fail once and the whole system fails, then to see that the probability of the system succeeding, you multiply the probability of each component succeeding to the nth to get the probability of a system succeeding when just one component could fail. All right, that's it.